I've had
just
dog
keep
food.
It inside and learn how to hide your
you have
feelings. Fly high
doggy chow. I used to love doggy chow.
I used to love doggy chow too.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to finally another episode of Girl Blogger, the podcast. I know it's been a minute. I've been lazy. I've been not doing anything. I haven't been busy at all. I've literally just been doing nothing. Well, I mean, like, I have a job, but I really don't have any excuse to have not kept up with this. Not that, like, my audience has been, you know, chanting in the streets demanding a new episode, but you know, it makes me feel good to be a little consistent. So here's the new one, better late than never, right? And this episode is gonna be all about the supermodels that was released on Apple TV a few months ago. It was a reason to subscribe to Apple TV because I don't really know many reasons why. I don't know what other shows air on. I think the morning show, but I'm not fucking watching that. I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's just not much content on there, or it just kind of gets lost in, you know, the grand scheme of all of the streaming platforms they are. Oh, a different podcast I listened to made a good point. It's almost like Apple TV is shadow banned and we just like aren't marketed it and people just forget the day that it exists. Anyway, sidetrack. So the Supermodels is on Apple TV and I loved it. You know, I mean, mainly just because of the subject matter, the supermodels. Of course, I'm going to love it. They would have had to really fuck it up for me to have not enjoyed it. But yeah, I mean, it was really cool, I think. It was just fun to revisit all of these women and just this era and just the nostalgia of how different things have become and what it was then, you know, whether you can say it's better or worse. In a lot of ways, I think it was better. Maybe in some ways it was worse. But there's just so much good archival footage of the runway shows, the photo shoots, everything's like high def because there's so, what bothers me as I post shit like this is that it's so hard to find high quality photos sometimes of these old photo shoots or these old ad campaigns. So to see them so crisp and HD in this docuseries was really just uplifting and exciting. So, I mean, gosh, there's just so much to cover on this. It's a four-part series, which, I mean, I get it. People just like to stretch things out these days and pump as much content in as they can. Did it really need to be four episodes? Probably not. But, you know, just more shit to look at and more things to hear about. So great. So the four people that it, or the supermodels that it focuses on, and I will say this because now having watched this and having heard other people's opinions and other things written about this, I do feel like I'm justified in thinking that they left Claudia Schiffer out. Like, I don't know if they have beef or maybe she didn't want to do it or something, but Claudia Schiffer was very much considered a supermodel. You see parts of her throughout the series, but they really don't mention her that much, but she's unavoidable. Like, you have to see her because she worked with these other women so much. The other women that they do focus on, of course, are Christy Turlington, Cindy Crawford, Linda Evangelista, and Naomi Campbell are who they define as the four supermodels. You also see a lot of like Stephanie Seymour, who is pretty much a supermodel of that era, and Tatiana, who was in the Peter Lindbergh photo that eventually is why George Michael put them in the Freedom 90 video. So she was pretty prominent in like a segment. And then, yeah, obviously Claudia Schiffer, Helena Christensen, Kristen McMenemy, and like people like that that were very much popular during that same time, that era of supermodels, but they didn't quite make the cut. Or Helena Christensen, I don't know if I already said her, but yeah, like Helena Christensen and Stephanie Seymour were both in those like extremely popular music videos. You know, Stephanie Seymour in the wedding dress, and obviously Helena Christensen on the beach in the Chris Isaac video. Like, huge moments in pop culture. But yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of modeling and being a supermodel, they weren't quite on the same level as the other four girls. But I mean, too, so my main takeaways and points from this docuseries was that just kind of, yeah, mainly how differently the industry is and just how extremely rare and what a novelty it was to truly be a model of that time, and especially these four women and how they became these supermodels. And just the accessibility of something like that is just so, like, there isn't really any. Whereas now they make a point at the very end of the documentary, which I'll get into, but just now how accessible it is to be a model or attempt to be a model or to just basically generate your own fame if you push hard enough for yourself. But back then, it ain't really how shit worked at all. And yeah, I also just, again, the archival footage was amazing. Just seeing all the side interviews of people like Steven Meisel and, you know, Marc Jacobs, John Galliano, like all these like fun people that also kind of came up, you know, in different ways at that time. well, Steven Meisel, I think, was already established, but whatever, you get it. Like, this was just like, so there was so much talent emerging then that still exists today and lingers today. Like, those people are still very much working and famous today. Like, there, it's interesting, it made me think about how, like, there haven't been many like new huge photographers like Steven Meisel, Richard Avedon, Annie Leibovitz. Like, all those people are still, you know, their photography like reigns supreme and they're hired still. And like Patrick DeMarchia, with a fucking Patrick, Devil Wears Prada. I have Patrick, that one. You know, they're still shooting all the time, and there really hasn't been many other like huge photographers that are now like, you know, deemed just as amazing as those people. I guess there's like Petra Collins is a new, very prominent photographer that I do love, but I mean, she has her own distinct style for sure, but I just don't know. And then there's like Terry Richardson, of course, that was huge, but he's kind of canceled, I think, right? Like, people just think he's a pervert. I mean, you know. But yeah, people aren't just as good, basically, is my biggest takeaway, and maybe a bit of a hot take on this whole thing, but no one's quite at that level. But okay, let's just get into things piece by piece. If you haven't watched it, definitely watch it. I love how in the beginning they kind of do like a little breakdown. Like, it reminds me of like video games when they kind of like pump up the character and like come up with like an exciting description to like make you want to pick them. That's what they did in the beginning to describe, or it's kind of like Linda Evangelista, honestly, talking about each of the girls and what's unique and special about them. And she says, Christy Turlington is the most beautiful. And that's kind of her shtick, which I believe. And watching this, it reminded me, is like, she is just so fucking pretty. And like, of course, all of the other ones are, but it's almost like the perfect face, like the golden ratio of, if God had to create like a perfect female face, that would be Christy Turlington. She really kind of looks like, those like things you see at the MAC cosmetic store where they like, it's like the stencil face that they like show different examples. It's like a drawing of a stenciled face, and they or an outline of a face that's kind of like chic and like Barbie looking. I don't know, whatever, but like, you've seen them and they do different examples of different makeup looks on it. Like, that is Christy Turlington's face. Cindy Crawford is the all-American girl, kind of like the girl next door if she was super fucking hot. And then Linda Evangelista is the chameleon that can pull off any hairstyle or color and kind of adapt to whatever designer she's working for, whatever photo shoot she's in. And then Naomi is just the fierce goddess, they say, and she definitely has the best walk maybe of any model of all time. It's like, if you think of a model walk, you think of Naomi Campbell, like, hands down. But okay, so the four episodes are broken down into the look, the fame, the power, and the fourth one is the legacy, which, like, I couldn't have come up with better titles. Like, that's very, like, I just love when somebody comes up with a cohesive little concept like that and it just works out perfectly. Like, those are the correct titles for these episodes. So yeah, The Look was fun, the first episode, because they really get into the backstories of all these sluts, and they the very, very beginning is, it's like you see all of them in present day kind of getting ready for this new like reunion photo shoot that they did for Vogue, which was a little underwhelming, but whatever, I won't nitpick at it because I still loved it at the end of the day and it was exciting to see them together. But yeah, so they're all kind of old but like still hot. Christy makes the point that they're all in their 50s and it's just like, fuck, like, so how old am I? Oh, time just goes so fast. It's crazy. And oh, I think one of the first things Cindy Crawford says is about how everyone says she looks like Kaya. And she's like, no, Kaya looks like me, which obviously, because that's her daughter. But I don't know. It's just, there's something a little upsetting about how, yeah, maybe like Gen Z or just the younger people don't realize that like Kaya Gerber is a product of Cindy Crawford, and Cindy Crawford absolutely like paved the way for her. Like, I mean, Kaya's a nepo baby, obviously, still love her, think she's a great model, but it's just funny to think that anyone would be like, oh, that's Kaya Gerber's mom. Like, no, bitch, like, it's Cindy. Yeah, whatever. So then after you kind of like touch on all of them getting ready in their makeup chairs for this new photo shoot, kind of goes back in time, and all the supermodels are doing their side interviews, kind of describing all of their childhoods. I love how Christy Turlington said the only other job she did was babysitting or cleaning stalls. And then she goes, I just thought to myself, there's got to be something better than this. Yeah, I fucking hope so, bitch. I hope you're not cleaning toilets and like babysitting other people's children for the rest of your life, especially looking like that. But so Christy was approached by someone, and they were like, oh, you should get into modeling. And so her and her sister were going to try modeling. But then they took one look at her sister and were like, hard pass on her. And we'll take you, Christy. And apparently her sister was so upset, where I'm like, okay, if your sister was upset then how the fuck does she feel now when you're now considered one of the greatest of all time living models? And she was, you know, passed up on, you know, on plain sight. The kind of like that show Next, she was like insta-nexted, and anyone that got instantly nexted on that show, it was because they were ugly. So sucks for Christy Turlington's sister. All right, and then Naomi was born in London to a single mother, never knew her father. That was something that, I mean, out of respect for Naomi, they really don't get into any details at all of who her father is. She just is very clear that never knew him, never had a relationship done, but never is it even mentioned, like, if it was her mother's ex-boyfriend or if it was anyone her mother really knew. That's just not made clear at all. It's just, she was a very single mother. Naomi was scouted by a talent agent, Beth Bolt, and she's like, oh, I didn't call her for weeks, but then, like, I called her and she, like, hired her immediately, or took her on immediately, I guess. Cindy Crawford grew up in the Midwest, as did I, so, I mean, as if I relate to that, but, like, I don't relate to her, but I guess it was just kind of fun to know, because she ends up then working in Chicago a lot, and I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, whatever, I'm grasping at straws to be in any way, connected to Cindy Crawford. And the one thing that I didn't know that was very sad about Cindy Crawford is that her brother died of leukemia at like age 9 or something, which was, must have been very traumatizing. And I just feel like it just shows how medically advanced we've become, because yeah, that was the 80s, I believe that must have happened, early 80s, and just how it doesn't feel like that long ago, but like they just didn't really know anything, and like who knows how long her brother could have lived, but basically didn't have leukemia that long before he died, so that was really sad. And then Cindy admits that all of her and her sisters, because I think it was 3 sisters and 1 boy, or yeah, so there was 4 kids, and they were like, oh, one of the girls should have died versus the only boy, which is just like so depressing to think that a child would think like that, although like I kind of get it, but like, fuck. I hope none of them carried that thought with them, in the rest of their life. Oh, yeah, and then so Cindy's doing all that shit, like, booked some, like, low-key lingerie shoots that ended up being, like, somebody like found them and like pasted them all over the hallways in her school, which reminded me of, if anyone's seen A Walk to Remember, when they do that to Mandy Moore's character, they like Photoshop her face on like a hot lingerie body, and it's like for some reason embarrassing. Like, that's not embarrassing to me. That's like cool. Like, oh, you love me so much, you're gonna like Photoshop a photo of me on like a hot model and paste it all over the school. I never understood in that movie why that was like so mortifying to her. But anyways, this kind of reminded me of that, and Cindy wasn't embarrassed at all, as she shouldn't. And she was like, ugh, I made like $120 on that shoot, losers. Better than working in the cornfields. And fuck yeah, she's right. Like, joke is on them. And then getting more into Linda, then I've noticed throughout this, Linda's maybe like kind of the funniest of the models. I'd say like Christy Turlington's probably like the most low-key, real, down-to-earth, like, I'm sure you could, she's just like a very sweet, non-dramatic woman, which she also says later that there's really no drama or scandal. Oh, which, going back to when I first brought up the supermodels in a past episode, when they revealed the, or they dropped the trailer, I was like, what are the Christy Turlington scandals? Turns out there aren't any, because she's just a very non-dramatic, easy to get along with person. So great for her. Cindy seems like the most like, she also seems very down to earth and sweet, but kind of like the most like businesswoman of them all. And then of course Naomi's the biggest personality, definitely the most diva like, but she also seems very professional. She just, I mean, to me it's no surprise that she like isn't married and is just now having her baby, I think, via surrogate. She just seems like someone that, you know, I mean, let's just call a spade, a bit narcissistic, but in the most fabulous way possible. So, love her for that. Okay, yeah, there's some other bullshit, blah, 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 blah. Linda went to Japan, like, they wanted her to get naked, she didn't want to, yada, yada, yada. A lot of different stuff about their upbringing. And the, another interesting point that Linda makes is she's like, a lot of models in general, and then these other supermodels in the documentary, kind of fell into modeling or were scouted. And Linda makes a distinct point that she chose this life and she wanted to be a model. Like, her dream was to be a model. And one of her like 7th or 8th grade teachers was like, see you on the cover of Vogue, because the teacher knew that that was her dream. And then just look at what happened. Like, so amazing. But then some other shit went pretty wrong for Linda, which we'll also get into. Eek. But yeah, Cindy Crawford was like co-valedictorian. So like gorgeous and smart, the most well-rounded. Yeah, that's another thing. Maybe Cindy could be considered like the most well-rounded supermodel. I don't know. I kind of would love it more to be like, oh, I was so hot, but like I was like, you know, a box of rocks when it came to school, and I like got straight Fs or something. Like, something to me about that is sexier. I know that's probably a horrible way of thinking and I shouldn't feel that way, but I also recently just read Elvis and Me, the Priscilla Presley book, and she kind of, without saying it too directly, is basically like, I like flunked school because I was with Elvis, because she got with Elvis when she was 14. Talk about that more when the film Priscilla comes out. But I don't know, it's just kind of like a little more Lana Del Rey, like, you know, glamorizing tragedy of like, oh, I was such an idiot in school, but like, I like was reaching my career dreams of modeling. Anyway, that's not what happened for Cindy. She was co-valedictorian. So fabulous. And then, yeah, Linda was kind of like struggling as a model and stuff, and just it wasn't like going that full speed ahead for her. But then she met Peter Lindbergh and he took some pictures of her, and that's when she really started booking a lot. And so they get into, then it's interesting, they definitely make a point of how things were handled within the agencies back then. It was pretty much, there was Ford Modeling Agency and Elite, and those were like the big ones in New York, and you were either with one or the other. And Eileen Ford was a very like classy broad, cared a lot about her models and people, and she had like a modeling house which all of the models lived in, and she also lived in New York, which is just kind of mind-blowing to me. Like, is it like set up like a dorm house or something, or is it set up like the houses in America's Next Top Model? Like, just kind of interesting to imagine what that must have been like. And oh, Cindy was modeling a lot in Chicago for some person that I can't even pronounce her name, Victor Skrbensky or something, and they were like the people to model for in Chicago. And it was like more of a set schedule for her, and she got an opportunity to do a shoot in Bali. And they were like, oh, if you take that job in Bali, this Victor guy was like, if you take that job in Bali, you're going to have to miss a day of work here, which means that you can't do that. You can't miss a day of work here. You can't take that job. And if you do, we will, you know, drop you as a model and you'll never work for me again, which seems so insane and so dramatic. It almost makes me feel like, okay, is Cindy being completely honest about this? Like, you miss one day that you let them know about, you're not even flaking on them, and they say they never want to work with you again. Turns out they didn't, because she took the job in Bali, and when she got back, they said, we're never going to work with you again, and they stuck to their word, which just seems so dramatic and insane to me. But I guess people were a little more cutthroat back then, not very concerned about being politically correct. So after that happened to her is when she goes to New York. And I think they kind of ended this episode when it's like, oh, they all landed in New York, and this is kind of when they all meet. And it's kind of like, here we're going to get into, you know, the next stage of the supermodels. And just a few other little things that I noted. It's just interesting, like, how they don't, like, get into it that much, but talk about like how retouching and Photoshop is really just not what it is now. Like, they did have a little bit of it back then, but there really wasn't much post-production. And Linda is like, it's literally like when the camera clicked, like that was the shot. Like, if you didn't get it, then like you didn't get a good shoot. So like, there was no faking it back then. And like, there is just a novelty to that and a magic to that that really is just not something we do anymore, which is sad, but, you know, it's 2020 fucking three, so you live and you learn, you crash and you burn. Oh, another thing that was a new thing I didn't know about Vogue, and I probably for a lot of the magazines back then, is you didn't get booked for a cover. You would just, like, do photo shoots, and they would be called cover tries, and some of them, if you were lucky, it was considered and, you know, possibly picked to be the cover of Vogue. Which makes me curious as to, if it wasn't picked for the cover, then is it just in the magazine somewhere, or is it just thrown out? Because it wasn't really for, you know, it's not a campaign for a specific designer or part of a certain editorial. So, like, I don't know, I just wonder, like, where all those lost cover tries are. Very interesting. Oh, yeah. And that was also, like, before celebrities were on Vogue. It was just models. So that's probably another reason why it was such a big deal for these girls to be on the cover of Vogue. Because it was just, you were only competing against other models. All right. Next episode, The Fame. When all the girlies are in New York gallivanting around the streets. I love how Cindy goes, if this wasn't the gold, she goes, this was the golden age of modeling. And she goes, if it wasn't actually the golden age, then don't tell me, because I don't want to ruin the illusion for herself, which I thought was cute, because I like it when celebrities kind of admit that they're iconic and admit that, like, they're the greatest of all time. Well, if they literally are, like, I think, like, Serena Williams recently did that, like, with tennis and stuff, and it's like, you are, so, like, you can say that. So it's like, she's acknowledging that, like, this was the golden age, but also, like, being a little humble by saying, like, oh, like, but that's so narcissistic of me to say, so kind of, like, backpedaling a little. I don't know, I just think it's cute. But yeah, they were all pretty much teenagers too, except for, I think Linda might be the oldest, so yeah. And Christy and Naomi were the first people to meet each other of the four of them, and they ended up living together, and then I think Linda also joined them at one point in living. I don't know, it's just, like, funny. It's like, I don't know, and it also makes you realize, like, oh, they must have not been making, like, crazy money. Like, they do make the point to make, say that they were making good money at that time, but it's also New York, and New York always will be notoriously such an expensive city, so it's just funny to think that even though these are three of the biggest supermodels, or they were about to be, that they all three of them still live together at some point. It's just kind of, gosh, like, I guess they weren't that rich yet. But, oh, and then somebody, I forget which photographer it says, but says that Cindy reminds him of Gia, as in Gia Karanji. Is that, am I pronouncing that right? I've never had to pronounce her name, but it's the one famous model that died very young that was played by Angelina Jolie in that movie, which I've shockingly never seen. I should watch that immediately. But I looked it up and I'm like, oh wait, yeah, Cindy Crawford does look like just like Gia. Like, it's crazy how much they resemble each other. And they talk about like going to Steven Meisel's, it's kind of like a factory, like Andy Warhol vibes. It's basically just like a studio, but like a lot of open space. It reminds me of like the Andy Warhol studio. And they said that Steven Meisel really kind of taught them all how to model, and that's kind of what elevated them. And then I always loved the shoot of Christy that Steven Meisel took of like her with like her shorter bob hair, which I'll also talk about, because like it's just so funny to me like how cutting a model's hair was just huge at this time. Steven Meisel called Naomi Bambi. Still, yeah, I note again, still no explanation of where Naomi's father was, but I think they bring this up a bit again because then they get into Naomi's papa, who is Azzedine Alaia. So apparently Naomi like got her purse stolen, so she didn't have any money. So some other model was treating her to dinner, and while she was at dinner, Azzedine Alaia comes up to them, approaches Naomi, and I guess is just like smitten with her, and he's like, you're perfect, you're gonna wear my clothes. And somehow this quickly evolved to her just living with him. She was like, he called my mother, and my mother had no idea who he was, but she felt safe, and that was that. I moved in like 3 days later, and I was living with Alaia. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, shit like that just does not happen anymore. And so she lived basically like in his studio or something in New York, which was above the boutique. Because then she's like, oh yeah, like, I was, you know, the boutique was my closet. Like, what 19-year-old can say that? Azzedine Alaia's store was my closet. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, I want that. Whatever. But yeah, another funny story about her and Papa is, I guess she would like sneak out sometimes to like go to clubs, and he would go out and find her and like drag her out of the club and being like, oh, you wore the outfit wrong. Or that's her talking. Papa did not speak like that. But I don't know. I just, yeah, I'm very fascinated by Naomi's you know, relationships. And then she later, I'll get into at the last episode, talks about her relationship with Nelson Mandela. That was her granddad. And she like very seriously calls them Papa and Granddad. Like, to her, those are like her actual father figures, which is sweet in a way, but it's also like, I don't know, just odd that it's like there's such a, you know, harsh line of her not ever, I guess, acknowledging really her birth father, and now these men that I don't know exactly how close she was to them. But Azzedine probably, yeah, for a long time, because she met him so young. But Nelson Mandela being, you know, as he lived in Africa and, like, is, I'm sure, just not seeing people and going out all the time, especially Naomi Campbell. It's like, how many times did you actually meet him or spend time with him, yet you're calling him granddad? Like, I don't know. It's just very funny. Yeah. But maybe I'm being judgmental. LOL. Oh, then, yeah, so Linda, I mean, yeah, sorry, jumping around, I'm just trying to hit, like, the main points, but there's a big kind of, Linda is really who you realize in this docuseries kind of went through the most shit. Like, these other girls, Christy, Naomi, and Cindy, like, definitely had their share of struggles, but in their adulthood, they kind of really just thrived. Like, they really didn't have to deal with a lot of tragedy and super hard curveballs like Linda did. Like, Linda got married very young, and to her agent, who, what the fuck was his name? Ugh, I forget. Oh, Gerald Marie, when she was 22. And eventually he got accused of sexually assaulting tons of models that worked for him. And the whole trial against him was a lot earlier than the Me Too movement. So I think a lot of people just wrote it off as like he said, she said, these cases are too old. And it was kind of just, it wasn't totally thrown out, but he wasn't convicted of anything, I don't believe. And he just kind of, you know, got away with all of it. But I mean, I believe it, of course, like, because she ends up having an abusive relationship with him. He mistreated her. So with that, and then the like staggering number of models that came against him, I think it was like over 10 models, maybe even over 20. They're not all lying. Let's just, yeah, I believe that. So that's fucked up. So that must have been a real struggle, because then the other girls, like, Naomi was never really, I don't think, put much of an importance in marriage, like I said earlier. And then Christy's had a great marriage, as had Cindy, so they really can't relate to your girl on, like, this psycho abusive husband. But they also didn't get married that early, so that's, I guess, just another lesson. Don't get married at fucking 22 years old. Oh, but yeah, then again, they talk about cutting their hair, like Linda cuts her hair and really talks about how that just like elevated her to the next level. And the minute she did that, she was booking all these Vogue covers and finally booked American Vogue, which is her ultimate dream come true that she dreamt of and told that seventh grade teacher about decades earlier, and or over a decade earlier. And then another really funny thing that I loved was they point out, they discuss Cindy Crawford's mole, and some magazines would edit it out. And then Richard Avedon did a kind of like glamour shot, like close up of her that ended up being a cover of Vogue. And he kept her mole because he loved it. And it was kind of like the seal of approval. Like, if Richard Avedon loves it, and if Vogue will print it, then the mole is in. And from then on, Cindy's mole was not only just kept, but it was like people obsessed over it. Like, people would then draw in their own mole. Like, Cindy's beauty mark was just like the most stunning little flaw that people loved in the 90s. So I liked kind of the you know, the origin tale of the mole, if you will. And then they talk a lot about how print models did not do runway, which I also didn't really know, but I guess makes sense. Is just that, like, those were kind of two different worlds. It reminds me of like how in entertainment back in the day, you either did TV or film. It wasn't as, you know, connected as it is now. And like, I wonder which was kind of more, I think back in the day, runway models were a little more of the lowbrow, as were, you know, TV stars. Not that they were lowbrow, but it just wasn't like the next level. Like, of course you wanted to be in the magazine, or of course you wanted to be in the movie. But then when people started crossing over, it kind of broke down that barrier, and people realized like, oh, like, who really gives a fuck? Like, we just want to see these people anywhere, like, whether it be the runway or print ads. And I think when these supermodels start doing runway shows, it's when runway shows became less of a showcase for buyers and editors of magazines, and more of like a performance art and a huge production that was then shared. You know, now it's shared on the internet. Back then it was just shared through magazines, but kind of like this huge spectacle of like things people like to watch. And I wonder if it aired on TV back in the day, because they obviously have video footage of all of those shows, so people were recording it. And now it's on fashion TV and all that, and it's, oh, there's whole YouTube channels dedicated to it. But I don't know exactly, maybe that's wrong of me and I should have looked that up, as to where you could watch runway shows back in the day, like if there was a certain network. But yeah, that's when runway really became the phenomenon we still know it as today. And runway shows now are, yeah, it's all about that shock value. What else? Again, Christy cut her hair while doing the Calvin Klein, while she was under contract with Calvin Klein, which was like a big scandal, which was also just surprising to me that, like, I mean, I suppose to do that without their approval was like a stab in the back, or not a stab in the back, but they make it out as though it is, as if she like horribly betrayed them. And it's like, Jesus, like, it's still her, like, what? But yeah, Grace Coddington, I remember, is being interviewed during the time they're discussing that in the episode, and she's like, yeah, that was, and you can tell just by her delivery of whatever she says that like Calvin was fucking pissed, which I don't know, it's just odd. Oh, Cindy Crawford doing MTV House of Style. It really just is like, yeah, all of their different endeavors now, and kind of the, all of them stepping up to being at the next level of everything, which ultimately builds up to what is maybe the biggest point that they make out of this docuseries, and maybe why Claudia Schiffer was not included, is that Peter Lindbergh shot a group of girls, five of them, Naomi, Christy, Cindy, Linda, and then Tatiana, for a cover of Vogue, kind of like announcing them as like the models of the decade, or like the new biggest models of all time. And from that photo, George Michael saw it and was like, these are the girls that need to be in my music video. And I kind of love that George Michael wasn't in a lot of his own music videos. I feel like that adds like a level of mystique to him, which was cool, that a lot of gay men definitely don't have. So definitely loved that and respect. But yeah, so like this music video, they, yeah, like basically this Supermodels documentary is very much, you know, intertwined with the music video, as though like this series is basically also just like the big, like that's the climax essentially of this whole story, is like all these girls were in this photo and they did this amazing music video, which it is probably still one of the most amazing music videos of all time, shot by or directed by David Fincher. And it's just amazing. And the music video just holds so much weight in the pop culture still now, but certainly of then, as well as just like, they can't really make a music video that has that kind of impact anymore. And yeah, it was just so huge, and it just launched them as they were already, you know, climbing up the ladder to a new level of stardom for models, and now this music video just like put them into a whole nother dimension that no one was even aware could exist. And yeah, maybe because of that music video gave them the fame and opportunities, because it was more than just the video, as you see in the Versace show that came, I forget what year it was exactly, but I think it was a spring summer show. And they're all in like bold, solid colored dresses, and it's four of them. So Tatiana wasn't in that show, but it was the four in the docuseries, and you see them going down the Versace runway, and they're also like lip syncing while the song is playing. Like, great, you know, styling note from whoever decided to play that song, because I mean, it's epic, it's iconic. And they all kind of admit that while they were walking down the runway and the song was playing and they were kind of, you know, reenacting what they had just filmed, they were like, this is iconic. Like, they almost knew how big the moment was that they had just done, and they were stars. That was it. From that moment on, it was just crazy. And so that's kind of where the second episode ends, on that peak. And the third episode, The Power. And yeah, kind of now it's like them living on this high that they've been brought to after the George Michael video. And really just kind of opening up this whole new door of celebrity for models, which is still definitely exists to this day. And it's why, you know, these models still are working to this day. Like, they make a point towards the end of how none of them imagined that they would still be working as models and still have the careers that they have today when they started out back in the 80s, because they were constantly reminded, and they constantly remind viewers of this documentary, that if you were a model back in the 80s or the early 90s before they became supermodels, you were told that your career as a model would likely be 3 years. Like, doesn't extend beyond that. Like, heavens no, are you going to be a model in your 30s? Like, that's just outrageous, unheard of. So they kind of were just like breaking down a lot of barriers for all of that. And now this episode is interesting because it's kind of like they're doing all these new things that didn't exist in the modeling or fashion industry before. So they were kind of just like riding it as they went along, not knowing what to expect. Whereas, like, yeah, things are constantly changing always in every industry, but a lot of times, until there's that shift or in a breakthrough where someone decides that, like, oh, it's not going to be this way anymore, people kind of know what to expect more in whatever it is industry they're working in. Whereas with this, yeah, it's like so much stuff changed on such a dime that no one really knew where things were headed, which is exciting and just kind of like I don't know, interesting to reflect on and think about how, yeah, the evolution of everything, because it's not just the models, but it's also fashion in general. Like, they talk about how the commercialization of designers and fashion in general, like, I didn't really think about it, but before the 90s, and especially before the 2000s, all clothing stores, clothing brands, and big designers were almost like mom and pop shops, where, like, they weren't produced on the scale that they are now. Like, people weren't licensing out a ton of stuff to other vendors to, like, build their whatever. Like, it just wasn't done as much as it is now. And the scale on, you know, fast fashion, it didn't exist back then. Like, back then it was under the guise of, oh, you have this, you have, like, your jacket, you have your shirt, you have your jeans. Like, everyone owned quality pieces that they had, and we weren't encouraged to, like, wear a different outfit every fucking day like we are now. So that was just something I didn't really think about until seeing this documentary and, like, all of the collaborations that end up having, like, Isaac Mizrahi for Target, like, that fucking thing. And then, like, Karl Lagerfeld for H&M. It was kind of like people seeing just these, yeah, boundary-breaking things that no one really thought were acceptable or possible before, and now happening all the time and branching out so much. And it's just, yeah, I don't know if I like it. But, of course, we can't go back to that, so c'est la vie. Sorry, I just kind of went on a tangent there. Now I'm trying to look back at my notes and see what the fuck else I'm going to talk about. Oh, another thing that I loved is that they were kind of, like, very, they make it seem it's a lot more like Christy, Linda, and Naomi were a little more, like, in the fashion, like, the fashion elite. Like, Cindy was as well, but she kind of branches out at this time to do more commercial things. Like, she did her Pepsi commercial, and just, like, more commercials and versus, like, high fashion things, where, like, Naomi and Linda especially were very kind of, you can tell how much they, like, love and respect and appreciate fashion. So they were more, like, determined to build themselves in that field. And Christy as well. And while they were doing that, they were in the circle of fashion, and a lot of up-and-coming designers like Marc Jacobs, who is at Perry Ellis, and then Anna Sui are the two ones that they highlight in this episode, of how they were friends with these designers, but the designers, you know, themselves couldn't really put on these huge shows to compete with, like, a Chanel or a Versace. And however, if these supermodels, though, were in their shows, then that would bring the attention and the press and, you know, ultimately the sales that they need to build into a bigger brand. And Marc Jacobs says, he's like, yeah, when I was working, honestly, if it wasn't for them, and especially Christy, I don't know if I could have ever really gotten on my feet, because you needed someone like them in order to bring the attention to your brand, because it was so competitive, I guess. But just kind of charitable, I thought, of these gorgeous supermodels, you know, lending a hand to these up-and-coming designers, basically because they had good taste and they were aware, like, these people are fucking good. And especially, oh, John Galliano was another one, and is, like, they were doing his show, and, like, he had such a vision for all of the girls and each of their looks, and they kind of realized, like, oh, like, not only are we doing him a favor, but, like, this guy's a fucking genius. And it was all just kind of like that Marie, or John Galliano had all that, like, Marie Antoinette glamour that's, like, all of his collections are very different, but there's always an element of that kind of, like, 1800s old school bitch that I love. Like, also Vivienne Westwood has that. And, yeah, it's just, especially John Galliano, I didn't realize that, like, they really helped him out, which is fascinating because, yeah, like, just such an important designer. What else the fuck can I talk about? There's just so much. Oh my god, the RuPaul. I love that they brought that up. I feel like a part of, yeah, of course they had to have, like, an LGBTQ element in this docuseries. And of course they did, though, because the supermodels were so influential in that. But I think Linda talks about, like, the RuPaul song and how flattered they all were that he listed all of them in the you know, in the lyrics. And he also lists Claudia Schiffer too, which they don't mention, but yeah, love RuPaul, love Supermodel. Oh, back to Linda's messy divorce. It's just sad. I mean, it's sad to hear about that. And then also branching off of her messy divorce, they also don't talk about how Linda she talks about her child, but they don't talk about how she had her child with that billionaire that's currently married to Selma Hayek. Just, yeah, there's a few things breezed over in this. They also barely talk about Naomi Campbell's assault. They do talk about the bad things that have happened, but more of like the things you'll have sympathy towards, like the tragedies that Linda's gone through. They don't go in great detail, maybe because she didn't want to, but like those are the kind of downs that they dive into and expand upon a little bit throughout the episode. But they really don't talk about the more like unbecoming scandals, like Naomi throwing a phone at multiple of her assistants. I think that happened multiple times. Yeah, I just, if you haven't watched it, everyone has to go and watch the Naomi Oprah episode where she goes on Oprah, and Oprah basically like comes in hot to confront her, and she's like, are you just a petulant child that gets angry when you don't get her way, when she doesn't get her way? And you see Naomi give Oprah this look like, bitch, I'm about to hit you. And it's just, oh God, Naomi, what a fucking queen. But she keeps it together and explains herself the best she can. But yeah, I mean, it's never okay to assault your assistant, but there is just something so hilarious about the idea of Naomi chucking a phone at multiple assistants when I wonder what they did wrong, you know, like why, maybe they deserved it. Why did these assistants get phones thrown at them? Like, what did they fuck up? Like, what, you know, what standard was Naomi holding them to that they didn't do? Like, did they not pick up her Starbucks, or did they like crash her car? Maybe it was warranted. Something to think about. Yeah. But and then they kind of talk about how with, you know, great power comes big egos, and how they don't really say outright, but pretty much Naomi and Linda's egos got the most inflated from their fame and from the power, if you will. And it was kind of just putting off a few designers, putting off people in the industry a little bit. But how much was it really? Because they never stopped working. So I don't know. I feel like they just kind of added that into the documentary because there's truth to it, and they just wanted to, you know, shake up the storyline a little bit. And then it's exciting to hear about how they enter the grunge era and how all these supermodels were kind of scared for a minute because it was kind of the anti-supermodel, and it was everything that they didn't really represent. Like, Cindy, Krista, Linda, and Naomi are like peak glamour when you think of them and their photographs and who they are as models, whereas the grunge movement was all about being like kind of unique, offbeat, waif. They really pushed the word waif a lot, which I'm not sure if they were talking about it as a negative or a positive, but they use that to describe this new wave of grunge models, obviously highlighting Kate Moss, and then Shalom Harlow and Amber Valletta they talk about too. But yeah, kind of really go into Kate and how she was just the new face. And it's interesting because although the supermodels are, who's in this documentary, Naomi, Christy, Linda, and Cindy, when I think of 90s, because like all those supermodels, they were kind of bridging the 80s and the 90s, like they were working in both decades very much so. But if I were to think of a model that represents the 90s, I would definitely say Kate Moss. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I feel like she was really just representative of what the decade was in a person, or as in a model, at least for fashion. So just interesting that like, even though those are the supermodels, I still would say Kate is the more decade defining model of the 90s. But yeah, I was, again, and I'm also interested as to why they were talking about these girls, but then still don't bring up Claudia Schiffer really. It's just kind of, I don't know. I want to know what the story is there. Like, do they hate her? What the fuck? Yeah, and just, they kind of end on a sadder note, with, like, Gianni Versace dying and, like, Naomi crying on the news discussing his death and kind of maybe establishing it as a bit of a, change for all of them and a change in the fashion industry. Yeah, and also with all the grunge movement, kind of like saying that, oh, not that their time is up, but kind of their, you know, riding their peak is a bit over now. And then we get into the final episode, The Legacy, which is also, I don't know, if I had to pick a favorite episode of these, maybe The Fame. Yeah, because like the thing that's annoying about when they stretch it out into four episodes like this is you kind of get dragged along and there's only certain parts of each episode that you actually want to watch. I feel like The Look, of course, it was interesting to hear about their childhoods, but I really just kind of want to be like, okay, get to when like they become, you know, famous supermodels. Like, that's what I want to hear about. So I guess The Fame, if you're going to watch one of these episodes, watch The Fame, because that's, I think, the bulk of, you know, everything that's important that they want to say about all of these girls. And that's also when they discuss, you know, the George Michael video, which is the whole thrust of what pushed them into being supermodels. So, yeah. But anyway, so now into the final episode, The Legacy. Oh, I also forgot to talk about how Cindy Crawford dated Richard Gere, which was kind of a moment, and how she brings up that at the Oscars for a minute, like, in order to be a serious actress, you basically, like, kind of had to dress dumpy, and, like, if you were a serious actress, like, how dare you look too sexy, because then you could be pigeonholed into just being, like, you know, a femme fatale or something, and, like, serious actresses had to wear, like, you know, more modest looking outfits, where then, not that Cindy Crawford ever thought she was a serious actress, but she went to the Oscars in that amazing red Versace dress. And it's not that she takes credit for it, but she kind of just points out that, like, that was a turning point, and she's like, I kind of brought fashion back to the Oscars, which, thank God she did, because nowadays, unless, you know, Will Smith is slapping someone, really the only reason to watch is to see what everyone's wearing. All right, anyway, The Legacy. So yeah, Cindy and her Pepsi commercial, got it. She's done like about a dozen recreations of that. Maybe not a dozen, but yeah, she's definitely recreated it. Still looks good every time. Yeah, again, they stress about how short modeling careers were back in the day, and how these supermodels, it was almost like there was a subtle fear that they thought it could be taken away from them, at least in the beginning. But yeah, and now they're kind of just mind blown as to how, wow, like 3 years, more like over 30 years, which is crazy. And then they get more into Linda, and they talk about how she's had breast cancer and everything. And it's just really sad, because she actually was like, did a lot of charity for breast cancer in the 90s, and then ironically ended up getting it. And then beyond the cancer, she also had some sort of like, I think it was a disease that she was born with, where her lungs would, you know, were easily traumatized, and she would have to get surgeries to correct them, and had a few. And then they bring up the Kool sculpting incident, which, if you don't know, Linda Evangelista tried Kool sculpting, I think, in 2014. And I think I talked about this in the previous episode, but if you get Kool sculpting, there is a very slim chance at this really bad side effect, in which basically it does the opposite of what you want to do. You want to dissolve fat and shrink fat cells, but sometimes Kool sculpting can actually enlarge them and make them like hard, fatty masses. And that unfortunately happened to her, and she now claims that she's deformed, even though she hasn't really shown what those deformities are. But she kind of showed in the People magazine issue where she discusses it. There's one like on her back, one maybe on her inner thigh. But she's really kind of good at hiding it, so we don't really know to what extent she's quote-unquote deformed. But you can tell that it's very much affected her self-esteem, and it's just, yeah, it's just kind of sad to see, because even though some people might say it's so superficial and, like, she looks great still, because she does, when you're valued that much on your looks for not only, you know, your relationships and in life, but, you know, for your livelihood and your career, basically, like, your beauty is what is your life. So for that to be taken away to any degree, I'm sure, is pretty traumatizing and a huge blow to one's ego. So yeah, that's sad. They kind of get more, they show more footage of like the new photo shoot for the Vogue that they're doing in their 50s to promote this whole docu-series. And so that's exciting. This whole episode is really dedicated to all of that these women have accomplished outside of being models, and just all their charities and all their good doings. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff I didn't know. Like, Christy Turlington had like a big anti-smoking campaign that she even like spoke about in Washington and made like PSAs essentially, which was interesting because there was a clip in I think the first episode where Naomi's like, I have to stop smoking. So it's just ironic that like Naomi is still smoking to this day, yet back in like the late 90s Christy Turlington was doing anti-smoking campaigns, yet here she is. Like, I don't know, it's just like Naomi was apparently not paying attention to those endeavors that Christy was doing because she was still lighting up. And Christy also did some like maternal thing I didn't know about. She hemorrhaged while giving birth, and then I guess I don't know exactly what how they aided to healthcare and to women, you know, pregnant women, but that's the point of the charity, is it like the means to prevent women from, you know, having birth challenges, and if they do have birth challenges then they'll be equipped to handle it because of whatever it's, I forget the name of this charity, but yeah, just an interesting niche thing that I'm sure women probably were wanting for years and years, so good of her to you know, be a provider for that in that sense. So go Christy. Naomi Campbell talks about her addiction and grieving the deaths and how that pushed her into addiction, but then she went to rehab and got clean, and then she did like, she's doing all these crazy things like helping Nelson Mandela, and then she basically created like African Fashion Week, which looks pretty fierce. I had never heard of it or seen it before, but they show video footage and like it honestly looks great. I don't know if that's still happening. We don't see it on Vogue, so I don't know why it's not getting more coverage, but I mean, amazing of her to produce that, even if I don't know how hands-on she truly was in it, but to even like get behind that and to put on a production of that scale as we saw that it was, is a pretty huge feat. So go Naomi for that too. And then Cindy's is more less about like charitable stuff. Well, she did a lot for leukemia because of her brother, which I thought was sweet and I'm sure very meaningful to her. But yeah, it makes a good point of how nowadays, like, her brother likely maybe could have survived, you know, a normal lifespan or definitely longer than he did. So nice to see her giving back in that sense for cancer. But aside from that, her endeavors were a little more like business focused. I thought it was interesting how she was offered to do Sports Illustrated, but whatever the deal was, she really didn't fucking like it. So then she went and made her own swimsuit calendar, which I don't know, to me seems like a bit tacky, but it sold well. So, I mean, fuck me. I guess she's the smart one. She's the one laughing her way to the bank. And then she was doing all of these cosmetic campaigns and contracts, and she realized like, oh, the best way to profit even more on this would be to have my own. So she had Meaningful Beauty, and it's a skincare line that I remember seeing those infomercials like in the early 2000s and thinking that she was getting old back then when she was like in her 30s, which is just like, oh no. Well, and the fact that she, I mean, I guess women start doing anti-aging stuff even in their late 20s, but the fact that she had a whole line about anti-aging when she was in her early mid 30s is just kind of laughable to think about, that was considered aging back then. Just kind of like how the whole, what we considered to be fat back then, but that's a whole different discussion that I should have at some point with myself on this podcast. Yeah, so Cindy was really like a business girly getting all that stuff. Oh, and then she also has a furniture line called Cindy Crawford Home, which I like audibly laughed at, which like it is like whatever, I'm sure it's gorgeous furniture, but I don't know, there's something so funny to me about when a celebrity gets into something that's like kind of offbeat and just nothing you'd ever expect for them to do. Like, I know now like Courtney Cox has a cleaning product line and it like looks chic. It's like kind of like Aesop vibes of like you know, luxury cleaning products, but it's also just like, what the fuck? Like, why does Courtney Cox have cleaning products? And like, Eva Mendez has a sponge line, which, like, if you ever check out her Instagram, it's kind of bizarre. But like, I don't know. There's just something silly about that to me when it's like a celebrity gets into something that's like so out of the ordinary from what you'd expect. But yeah, Cindy Crawford home. Wonder if I can pick up an end table or something from there. And she's super hot and has two super hot kids, both of which are now models, and Kaya's a supermodel. Yeah, Cindy Crawford has, like, and Christy Turlington, honestly, is what I've come to learn from this docuseries, is they have close to perfect lives, I pretty much say. They really didn't get into much crazy shit. And, and like I mentioned earlier, Christy flat out says, like, I'm not a dramatic person. I always avoided that. She's like, when I saw other people being divas, I just couldn't compete with that and didn't want to, so I just didn't. And, like, just never had to, and she's just a low-key, chill bitch. And, like, she has kids, too, now. I think she's still married to whoever she's married to that she's been married to for years. And, yeah. And that's kind of it, honestly. Then it's, like, them talking about social media and the influence that have, and how, like, the new wave of models, they show Kendall Jenner and, like, Hailey Bieber and that kind of thing. And, like, they don't really say that it's bad, but they just kind of discuss how the industry's changed. And I don't know, just kind of interesting to hear their opinion on it. I'd like to hear their, like, real raw thoughts on it. Like, I know Linda certainly isn't happy with how different everything seems to be versus what it was, but I don't know that for sure. It just seems the vibe I picked up on. And yeah, like them shooting at the end, I wish the photo shoot was a little more iconic in some way. I don't really have a theme or something to offer them, but like everything just seemed a little too like the pieces weren't statement enough. They just didn't really go for a whole look. I would have liked a more dramatic landscape, you know, something that's just a little more memorable. I don't know, like, I feel like we won't be talking about these photos for that long. And then on an ending note, probably one of my favorite quotes of the entire series, I don't know if I already said this because I've been talking so long and my mind is just gone, but Cindy says, she's getting her makeup done and somebody goes, how many times or how many hours have you spent in a makeup chair in your life? And she goes, I used to say, oh, if I had a nickel for every time I got my makeup done. And then she goes, oh, wait, I do. Ha ha ha. And it's just like, I mean, me just repeating it out loud sounds kind of stupid and not funny. But when you watch it, it's cute. And I actually did laugh at that and I loved it. So yeah, that's the supermodels, everyone. I kind of gave you everything, so there's really no need to watch it if you made it through this entire episode. But I'd say it's definitely worth watching just to revisit how iconic all of these photo shoots were, all the runway shows were, and just all the archival behind the scenes footage, especially of like when they're super young. And just, yeah, like there's a lot of like high school photos from childhood. And it's always just to see celebrities kind of like stand on their hind legs, you know, and it's like these out of the box situations you see them in. That's kind of, you know, interesting to see. And yeah, whatever. That's the supermodels. Cool. Gonna try and get more into a regular posting of these because, you know, it's something to do and it's a way to express myself. And speaking of the legacy, this podcast could be my legacy. If I ever die and someone wants to be reminded of who I am, it's just me talking about all this bullshit for hours on end. So yeah, maybe I'll talk about, I need to get into Kim Kardashian's performance on the new American Horror Story, which I'll get into that definitely. Some of the fashion shows that have been happening. I bought Sofia Coppola's book, and there's more. There's always more. There's always fucking something happening. Britney dancing with knives. That's something to talk about for sure. All right. Love you, bitches. Bye.